As Pope, he came three times, three very historic visits. The longest visit that he made as Pope, the longest pastoral visit of all of those 104 visits, was in Canada in 1984. And it was 10 full days from sea to sea to sea, from coast to coast. Extraordinary visit. Many people say that that visit united Canada, that Canadians got to discover Canada because of the massive television coverage. And a strange thing happened. One of the aspects of that visit was to include a visit to the Northern Territories, where the native communities are. And because of inclement weather, he couldn't make that visit. So he promised the First Nations people that he would come back. Nobody believed that. And sure enough, 3 years later, on a visit to the United States, he decided to take a little detour on the way home, flew up to Edmonton, stayed overnight, and then went to Fort Simpson, the native communities. And those are the wonderful images we have of him being vested for Mass in a teepee and coming out of the teepee in the white native vestments. And then, of course, the big visit, the one that most people in today would speak about, would be 2002 for the World Youth Day.
And that was World Youth Day in Toronto.
That's right.
And certainly a brilliant event. And you were largely responsible for coordinating his visit that time. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like to be hosting John Paul II in 2002?
The Canadian bishops asked me 3 years before that to be the national director and CEO of the visit, which included not only the World Youth Day, but also the visit of John Paul. Looking back, the easiest part of that whole experience was John Paul II. We had one pope to worry about, and he sprung a surprise on us by saying he wanted to come for a week of vacation beforehand. So he arrived 5 days earlier and stayed at Strawberry Island, which is now infamous. It was the island that at the time belonged to my religious community, the Basilian Fathers. And what wonderful memories that conjures up those days. Then, of course, the World Youth Day itself. John Paul was very easy to care for during that visit, and he was really the star of the whole experience.
You had a chance to speak with him personally, of course, in that time. Do you have some stories from his time there?
There are many, many times. Before the World Youth Day, I think I had, I haven't really counted them all up, but at least 11 or 12 times that I met with him and spoke with him. Three of those times I brought members of our staff to Rome so that he could meet them and they could meet him. And a bond was forged, which has really shaped a generation of young adults. Many of the young adults that worked on my staff felt that they were doing this as a labor of love directly for him. And then, of course, the visit itself, we were together several moments during the visit. I had to bring 14 young people up to Strawberry Island for lunch with him. The Vatican had requested young people coming from parts of the world that knew strife and violence and war. And it was a memorable hour-and-a-half lunch at the table with the grandfather, if you like. Then, of course, different moments during the visit, some wonderful moments. One funny moment, he was at Strawberry Island and didn't participate in the Stations of the Cross because it was too much for him to come down on the Friday night. But we put a special television, a receiver, and a satellite dish at the island so he could watch it live on the CBC network. And he watched it. We have photos of him sitting in the chair, and we did a live switchover to him, showing him watching the Stations of the Cross. And this was beamed to all of the screens of the 600,000 people watching this on University Avenue. And it was the only cheer during the whole Stations was that moment. Anyway, he was really taken by the Stations of the Cross. So the following day, I saw him when he came down for the protocol visits of the government. I was with him for the 3 hours in the room receiving the heads of state of Canada. And he kept on referring to the Stations of the Cross in a deep voice. Ma chi sono? Sono a Turri. Sei stato bello. Hai bloccato tutta la città. You blocked the city. I said, we did, Holy Father, we did. And he just kept on asking about the actors. I said, they were no actors. These were all young people. And then he pursued it. So I said, would you like to meet them? Certo. So I called the priest who was in charge of the Stations of the Cross, and I said, I want you and the 50 actors on a bus on the departure day on Monday the 28th of July, or 29th of July. You're coming to the airport to see the Pope off. And sure enough, the Pope came over in the helicopter. I brought him down on this mobile platform. There was a red carpet, and I leaned over to him and I said, the last people to say goodbye to you now will be the actors of the Stations of the Cross. And one by one, I brought them over. I said, this is Simon of Cyrene, who was a young handicapped boy and a quadriplegic. This is a young girl who played the part of Mary of Magdala. This is another one. And I said, and this is Jesus. He will say goodbye to this tall figure with long flowing hair. And I remember the Pope saying, Jesu mi saluta. Jesus will say goodbye. And I said, no, 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 it's just at the airport, you know. And then taking him over to the steps of the plane. And we had arranged for him when he arrived to come on a lift. We practiced. The nuncio and I had practiced with this special lift. And sure enough, when the plane arrives, no Pope, no lift. The Pope comes down the stairs of the plane, which really set the whole thing off in an incredible way. So for the departure, he was exhausted. We were all ready for him. I prepared the lift to take him up to the plane, and I got to the bottom of the stairs. And I remember greeting him, embracing him, saying, Arrivederci a Roma, see you in Rome. And I said, the lift is ready. And he leaned over and he says, I came down the stairs, I'll go up the stairs. It was, and we watched there, dumbfounded, the chiefs of police of the country and everyone else, watching him painstakingly go up that staircase. And people have said that was probably the last time that he walked, because when he went from us, he went to Guatemala and Mexico City for Juan Diego's canonization. But then when he came back to Rome, we saw how difficult the movement's mobility was.
You've shared with us some of your personal experiences with him. Can you tell us a little bit, for many of us, John Paul, for all of our early lives, was the only pope we ever knew. In some ways, we all loved him, but he's not exactly a distant figure, but he was the Pope up there. You've talked to him personally, and now you're going to be able to say you've spoken with and interacted personally with a saint, someone who's canonized in the Catholic Church. What does that mean to know and have a personal experience with someone who is sainted?
Well, you know, when I was with him the many times in preparation for World Youth Day before, and then the six times I saw him after World Youth Day, I knew that something was in this man that was extraordinary. I didn't go and say, you're a saint, or come back and say, I just talked to a saint. But this was a man, as I mentioned in the book, who I was pretty clear, pretty certain that he lived with God and lived with us. And you knew that you were talking to somebody, but there was something much greater that was taking place. I remember being in the chapel with him several times in the papal apartment in Rome, at the Vatican, and also at Castel Gandolfo. And watching him pray before Mass or after Mass gave me and many other people a desire to pray. I remember several times opening the helicopter door. It was one of my responsibilities when the helicopter would land with him in it, to open the door, and we had to really lift him out. And there he was with his office book in his hand praying. And none of us dared intercept or intervene and say, we let him finish praying. And then he would look up and I say, ci siamo, andiamo. And then he put the prayer book down. So here was a man who was in this constant dialogue with God. He was the Pope of Holiness. And, you know, the Second Vatican Council, Lumen Gentium, gave a great emphasis to holiness and the call to holiness extended to everyone. And it's very important that we see this call embodied in a person's life. And what this canonization and holiness mean is this is not some kind of a perfection that erases all kinds of faults and errors. I mean, the first requirement to be a saint in the church is you have to be a sinner, but a sinner who recognizes the power of God's mercy and forgiveness and lives in that experience. As I mentioned also in the book, that canonization, beatification, is not the good housekeeping seal of the Vatican, that everything was in perfect order, that everything in your administration went perfect without any faults. Or we're seeing all that stuff come out in the papers now. Perhaps some things that, you know, deserved a little more attention or whatever. That's not the purpose of canonization. The purpose of canonization is this man had a quest, a thirst for God. He recognized God's powerful mercy. He let that mercy invade him and occupy him and become the primary motivating force of his life. And that person becomes a role model for others. That's what all of this is about. So I was conscious of the fact that, yes, I was in the presence of somebody. He was close to God.
Oh, it's very interesting to see that and to recognize. You anticipated my next question I was going to ask you. You brought up Vatican II and Pope John Paul II obviously emphasized the universal call to holiness as well. And so what does that look like for individuals who see John Paul and they're in high school or they're working a job or they're a priest in ministry? What does it mean when they see John Paul, and how does that affect them in their own lives? How do they how did they use that to respond to the call to holiness in their own position, in their own lives?
The purpose of saints is never to freeze somebody in time, but it's to take us to the bigger picture. One of the difficulties of many of the young people who were part of the last World Youth Days, I would say from Paris onward, 1997 onward, is the Pope that they knew and saw was a man who was infirm, who was suffering, and who was sick. And especially in our World Youth Day in Toronto, it was so uncertain whether he was going to come or not. So they relate to that image of a sick person, of an infirm person. But even that image tells us that God is very much at work. And many, many young people told me, in him they saw the grandfather they never knew. They saw the sick relative or the infirm person that's often shunned aside. He died in a public way. He died before us. So God worked through that. For my generation, I was 19 years old when he was elected. And what intrigued us is here's a pope who announced publicly that it was cheaper to build a swimming pool at Castel Gandolfo than to call another conclave. And so he swam and he went on mountain climbing trips and canoe trips. And he still did that as pope. And we now know all the escapades of sneaking out on Tuesdays to go to the mountain and stuff like that. Here was a man who fascinated us. And then this commanding presence on center stage, the papal visits and the booming voice and the meetings with young people, the meetings with the Jewish people, the meetings with Muslim people. I mean, each of us has a different take. I kind of say it's like, you know, when you stand before the Hope Diamond in the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, it's so huge that from no matter where you stand, you see it from different angles and you can never get the whole picture. I think that's all. And the purpose of making somebody a saint is all of those moments of the person's life form the composite that the Lord was present in the agility, the Lord was present in the youthfulness, in the boldness and the courage and the fall of communism, but the Lord was also mightily present in the diminishment of this man.
And finally, bring you back to this book, John Paul II, A Saint for Canada. That's something very specific. Obviously, Pope John Paul had a special relationship with Canada. I think he was the first pope to visit Canada.
Yes.
He was the first pope to visit so many countries in the world. Tell us, why is John Paul II a saint for Canada in a special way?
I should say that I didn't choose the title. It was the publishers that chose the title, because anybody who reads beyond the second page will realize that this is a pope for the world. But there was a unique relationship with Canada in those three historic visits, his last World Youth Day in Canada, his affection for Canada, his fascination with the native communities. I mean, he asked me many times about the native communities. There was one moment I showed him pictures of where the World Youth Day Cross was going. And there was one picture. I had the album in his office, and I was showing him. I said, this is the World Youth Day Cross. It's in the Northern Territories, and it was in the middle of this snow with all kinds of Eskimos and Native people dancing around the cross with a bonfire. And I remember him saying to me, "May una foto vera? Is this a true photo?" I says, "Holy Father, I'd never show you a false photo." And he says, "I want that picture." So I remember pulling it out of the plastic thing, and I gave it to him. And he looked at it, and he was amazed, fascinated by this. And when I brought Native young people, First Nations, to meet with him several times, the amount of time he spent with them, and very playful. I remember one young guy handed him a feather one day from his grandfather, who was the Native chief, and the Pope took the feather and put it on his head, you know. And so there was a special relationship. But the book is really, it's a little bit deceiving, because it's not about just Canada. It's the impact of World Youth Days, the impact of the suffering, and the long-lasting messages he gave to each country that he visited.
And finally, Father, it's very great to have you back in Rome again. Obviously, this canonization will mean a great deal for you with someone that you knew personally being canonized. What are you expecting most out of this upcoming weekend and the events surrounding the canonization of John Paul II and, of course, John the 23rd as well?
Both John the 23rd and John Paul II are kind of like the bookends of my ministry. John the 23rd was the pope of my youth. I was born in 1959, and he called the council in January of 59. I grew up, that was the wind under my wings, if you will, fascinated by this man who impacted the world in only 4 or 5 years, 1958 to 1963. And yet the memory of Pope John lives. You know, it's the Pope of goodness and John Paul, the Pope of holiness. And to have these two figures raised up before us, they're role models that we need goodness and holiness. We need kindness. We need forward-looking vision and courage. The other thing is these are not popes locked into a time period. And for me, they're not being canonized to balance each other out, as some people would like to think. They're being canonized because the church makes saints and succeeds when she wants the rest of us, or gets the rest of us to want to be like them.